paralysis comes from here. If you're trying
but
to...
But you're talking about humbleness.
That's another subject. If you are simple, you are humble, and vice versa. This is not two different aspects. Brother, let me tell you another expression.
Please.
It says, two persons are afraid of an empty gun. The one who is in front of the gun thinks he doesn't know. It's an empty gun.
Yeah.
He thinks
he's going to be
killed. He's going to be shot at.
He's going to be shot.
He's going to be killed. Mm. And the one who even has his own finger on the trigger, he knows there is no bullet in it. If the guy in front of him, okay, jumps on him, what is he going to do? Nothing. He has no bullets.
No.
So two persons are afraid of one empty gun. This is when you don't have the true knowledge.
Exactly.
Then you fear, okay?
Quite.
You have no power.
Very eloquently.
That's
put.
Why you become simple. Yeah. That's why you become humble. When you have a true knowledge.
Knowledge.
And true knowledge comes from true...
The true source.
Source. True source. Remember, I didn't say true teacher because we don't call God teacher.
No. The true source.
That's a different story.
Yeah. The truth.
Okay?
The truth, that's
a
what
true
we're talking
source
about.
Is the most knowledge one, the most powerful one, the most wise one.
Yes.
I even shouldn't say the most, because when I use the word the most, it sounds like I'm comparing something with, you know, something else.
Sure.
But there is no way to compare it. The wise, the might, the knowledge one.
Yes.
So. The real source.
These are the
real source.
The Safat you're talking about God.
Yeah,
the attributes, the names.
The names.
Yes.
Which actually is action,
yeah.
Which is power.
Yes.
When you're talking about God, you're not talking about the identity, the
no.
true sense of God. You can't do that.
No.
There's a tradition.
Hmm. Please quote it.
Tradition says, don't think about God, about the sense, the true sense of God. But if you want to get to know God, think about the benefits, or we call it ni'mah, the things that He gave us, which they become, every single one, they become sign of God, sign of His knowledge, His being, His power, and His mercy. Iman was simple because of this, because in the Quran, if you get to know Quran, you become simple. You don't need to get complicated. You don't need to get sophisticated about it.
Dr. Hasni, thank you for that, for what you've said so far in terms of the discussion of the personality of the Imam. The simplicity, the honesty, these beautiful values that take us towards Allah. Because really what we are talking about at the end of the day...
Brother, the point is this. If we get to know Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, the way we're supposed to...
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
We become a good follower.
Yeah.
We cannot go astray.
No,
no matter
can't.
What.
No.
We always are steadfast on the right track, doing the right thing, of course, from A to B without any damage.
Well, the thing is that you come back to that legacy of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, who was not able to put that down in words, but the Imam certainly did, and we hopefully will discuss that at a later stage as well. And that is that he talked about two things. He talked about the two legacies that the Holy Prophet left. That was the Quran and his family, the Itrati. And that was a principle. Let's continue this discussion into the next program, and we're going to look at...
God willing, we are going to.
Yeah,
if we get a chance, we are going to...
We'll look at other aspects of this simplicity,
exactly.
Honesty,
mm-hmm.
and the purity of intention. Mm-hmm. I want to go into this aspect.
Purity, that's a
yeah.
good subject
yeah,
also.
Yeah. God so let's do that into the next program. Thank you, listeners, for... being on the for listening to us today. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you for giving me a chance to do so.
No, that's all right, Doctor. You're welcome, Dr. Hasni. And may the peace and blessings and mercy of Allah be upon you all. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you, brother.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل درجه.
The Light.
A rare albino baby elephant that was rescued from poachers in South Africa has found a new home with a welcoming herd. The calf named Khan Yisa was caught in a snare in the Kruger National Park when she was only 4 months old. She suffered several nasty wounds, including one to her mouth. Khan Yisa remained trapped in the snare for 4 days before being rescued and taken to a shelter especially built for elephants northeast of Johannesburg. All the other elephants there are orphans too.
Each female that we had has a baby. So except for them, all of the others are orphaned. And I think that is part of the reason why they accept these orphans, because they know how it feels, you know, and they become actually, you know, the mother figures for them.
The calf has learned to adapt to the new life. She lies under the shadow cast by bigger elephants to protect herself from getting sunburned. The shelter says if the herd grows too big for the area, she and other elephants will be released into the wild. A Brazilian artist has found a way to reuse plastic bags in a very creative way, making something beautiful out of them. Eduardo Sroa turns recycled shreds of plastic into real pieces of artwork. He picks up the material from city streets and rivers. Without using a drop of paint, Sroa recreates paintings by Picasso, Van Gogh, and other famous artists. He says his goal is to draw attention to plastic pollution.
I present this series as a product that does not have paint, except for what has already been processed into plastic by the industry. It does not have glue. It is a box that was built, and inside I press and condense it. I make an accumulated cluster of plastic bags that ends up creating this image that you see.
Sura's exhibition is due to open in Sao Paulo in the coming months. His previous works were also aimed at raising awareness about the environment. He has created several giant installations in public places, mostly along polluted rivers.
Chinese archaeologists have unearthed a rare 3,000-year-old bronze figure from a site they have been excavating for months in Sichuan province. The 1.5-meter figure, deemed one of China's most famous archaeological discoveries. It consists of two parts. The upper part is 55 centimeters high, with a zoon, a vessel used in ancient times, on top of the head. The lower part is 60 centimeters in size, with kneeling posture. Similar findings in the past were just 20 centimeters in their heights. The bronze figure was discovered under massive ivory objects. So far, over 500 objects, including ivory, bronze, gold, and jade ware, have been found from six sacrificial pits of the Sanjiangdu ruins. A Chinese man becomes the first blind Asian mountaineer to successfully scale the world's tallest peak, the Mount Everest. Zhang Hong completed the 8,849-meter high Himalayan feat with three high-altitude guides. The 46-year-old climber said he spent much of his trek holding onto his guide's arm. The pair said the most tiresome and risky areas were the so-called death zones, ice walls, and ice falls at around 8,000 meters. The Chinese climber recalled humbly embracing being part of Mother Nature after he completed his arduous journey.
No matter if you're disabled or normal, whether you have lost your eyesight or you have no legs or hands, it doesn't matter. As long as you have a strong mind, you can always complete anything that other people think you can't.
Zhang added that this is only the beginning. He said his next milestone is climbing the highest peaks from the world's continents, known as the Seven Summits. The Chinese mountaineer lost his eyesight at the age of 21. After his success, he became the third visually impaired person to ever step foot on the Everest peak. Russian company has developed a fully self-driving car that looks like it was taken right out of a sci-fi movie. Flip is the size of a conventional passenger car and has enough space for six people. Its creator says the advanced vehicle is a taxi of the future. Flip has fulfilled the requirements of international automated driving standards. It's powered by electricity, but it can also use other fuels like gas and hydrogen. The owners of this futuristic vehicle do not have to worry about running out of power. That's because its replaceable batteries can be changed in less than 5 minutes once they are out of electricity. A rare baby giraffe is born in a zoo in western France as conservationists try to increase the population of this endangered species. The cute Rothschild giraffe is the second born in a French zoo this year. Caretakers say the cubs will stay with a facility for 1 year before they would be sent to another site to start their own families. The Rothschild giraffes are critically endangered, and conservationists say that only 1,600 of them exist now. The general giraffe populations in the wild have also decreased by around 30% in the last 3 decades.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
For many professional climbers, ascending Mount Everest for even once remains an almost distant dream. However, a Nepali man has achieved that feat not once or twice, but 25 times. Kami Rita Sherpa has arrived back in the capital, Kathmandu, after breaking his own whopping record of 24 ascents to the summit of the world's tallest mountain. The veteran climber hopes that his accomplishment represents a big achievement for his small country. Climbing tall mountains runs in Kami's blood. He belongs to the Sherpa tribe, one of the Tibetan ethnic groups and native to the most mountainous region of Nepal.
Now, the iconic Eiffel Tower in Paris has been illuminated for the first time using electricity produced from certified renewable hydrogen. In an amazing show, hydrogen-generated lights were projected onto the tower's frames, displaying various patterns and designs, making viewers ecstatic. It's a dream project of a French company based in the city of Saint-Malo. The company wanted to make the most recognizable landmark a showcase for its carbon-free technology. The objective is to bring more awareness of renewable energy to the public. The nightly event will continue until May the 30th. Countries around the world are investing a lot to develop hydrogen-related technologies. A French musician helps patients in an end-of-life care home to escape from pain by playing the cello for them. Let's have a listen.
Music soothes pain as music eases their symptoms. In palliative care, in end-of-life care, there is sometimes still pain in spite of the morphine, in spite of the drugs that really help manage the pain of the patients. They still feel pain, and music really has a calming power on the residual pain of palliative care patients.
The sound of Claire Oppert's solo cello resonates through the rooms of Jean Garnier end-of-life care home in southern Paris on Fridays. She plays for patients who suffer from physical pain as well as terminal illnesses.
The center's staff say music lightens patients' moods and puts them in a calm state.
After Claire leaves the room, we find the patients in a calm state, at times moved, at times happy. A lot happens. There are moments of tears, moments of joy. When we go into the room, we find there is an encounter with the person and his or her story.
I'm in permanent pain. The music helps a little to escape from the pain, I think. You pay attention to the music, and if it's a piece you know, you anticipate the next note. There you go, it's like that.
Claire has been playing the cello for patients in end-of-life care for almost a decade. She says the fact that music makes people feel good has been known since the beginning of humanity, but today it needs to be proven scientifically. Therefore, she has made it her mission to demonstrate the therapeutic effects of music on patients by taking medical studies.
The Russian zoo is delighted to welcome a new resident, a rare snow white wallaby. The cute joey named Elisa was born at Regina Zoo in the southwestern city of Kazan. Zookeepers say she is healthy, playful, and has won the visitors' attention. Interestingly enough, Elisa's brother Alec was born with normal pigmentation. Wallabies are members of the kangaroo family. The albino wallaby, which has no skin pigmentation and pink eyes, is believed to be extremely rare. Circus and lab animals are getting a second shot at life after a Frenchman built a sanctuary using his own private funds. The sanctuary houses some large animals like rescued lions, elephants, and hippos, but it's also home to some lab creatures that were kept for scientific studies, such as the macaques. Circus and lab animals are usually euthanized if they are not rescued. Owner and sanctuary investor Patrick Viola says every day he takes numerous phone calls from circus owners asking about free space at his shelter.
More than a zoo, this is a shelter. It is a refuge above all for animals that need it when there is no other solution. You know, we get 5 to 6 calls every day. Fortunately, in 90% of cases, our help is not even needed. You can't just call us and say, hey, I have a horse, I don't want it anymore. There are plenty of other options. We put a lot of people in touch with each other. People who look for animals and people who have animals they need taken care of. We accommodate animals when there is really no other solution.
Patrick says his shelter is one of 3 sanctuaries that are able to look after wild animals and the only one with the space capacity. He said he's planning an extension as a bill aimed at phasing out the use of wild animals in circuses passes through Parliament. Based on government figures, there are some 80 traveling circuses in France. The ban will be phased in over 5 years once the legislation comes into effect. First a hobby and now a money-making career. A Chinese artist creates objects out of wolf felt in a studio in Beijing.
I came across pictures about wolf felt art online by chance. I was very interested in this kind of material, so I did some research and started to try to make something. I've been doing it for about more than 10 years now. I didn't expect that I could do it for such a long time. At first, it was just a little hobby. I wouldn't have thought that I would do it as a profession.
Yin's current exhibition is themed on a warm sense of family unit depicted by cute and cozy mushroom-headed figures. One features a small mushroom-headed family, another features a life-sized adult and child with the same shape. Other artworks include plants and animals, but whatever the creations are, they are infused with human emotions, making people feel good. That's what the 31-year-old Chinese artist says. So far, she has been part of 9 exhibitions in China and Japan.
This is IRIB English Radio. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EM.
Limelight. U.S. President Joe Biden has used the centenary of the Tulsa race massacre as a rallying cry for America to be honest about its history, insisting that great nations come to terms with their dark sides. On Tuesday, 1st of June, Joe Biden became the first sitting U.S. president to visit the site where, on 31st of May and 1st of June 1921, exactly 100 years ago, a white mob murdered up to 300 African Americans and burnt and looted homes and businesses, raising a prosperous community known as Black Wall Street. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist David Smith. The piece is titled, Joe Biden Calls for U.S. to Confront Its Past on 100th Anniversary of Tulsa Massacre. U.S. President Joe Biden has used the centenary of the Tulsa race massacre as a rallying cry for America to be honest about its history, insisting that great nations come to terms with their dark sides. On Tuesday, 1st of June, Joe Biden became the first sitting U.S. president to visit the site where, on 31st of May and 1st of June 1921, exactly 100 years ago, a white mob murdered up to 300 African Americans and burnt and looted homes and businesses, raising a prosperous community known as Black Wall Street. Biden pleaded for America to confront its past and admit that a thread of hatred runs from Tulsa, Oklahoma, through more recent displays of white supremacy in Charlottesville, Virginia, and most recently at the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. on 6th of January this year. He also drew a connection to a Republican assault on the voting rights of people of color and announced that Kamala Harris, the first woman of color to serve as vice president, would lead the White House effort to resist it. Biden began by speaking directly to the last three survivors of the Tulsa race massacre, centenarians Viola Mother Fletcher, Hugh's Uncle Red Van Ellis, and Lessie Benningfield Randall, who received a standing ovation from an audience of around 200, made up of survivors and their families, community leaders, and elected officials. You are the three known remaining survivors of a story seen in the mirror dimly, but no longer, said Biden, a comparatively youthful 78-year-old. But now your story will be known in full view, he said. Knowledge of this violent attempt to suppress black success in Greenwood, Tulsa, Oklahoma, fell victim to a decades-long conspiracy of silence. The atrocity was not taught in schools, even in Tulsa, Oklahoma itself, until the mid-2000s and was expunged from police records. Those who threatened to break to the taboo faced disapproval of or even death threats. Even many black residents preferred not to burden their children with the story. Joe Biden said, "For much too long, the history of what took place here was told in silence, cloaked in darkness. But just because history is silent, it doesn't mean that it did not take place. And while darkness can hide much, it erases nothing. Some injustices are so heinous, so horrific, so grievous, they can't be buried, no matter how hard people try. So it is here. Only with truth can come healing and justice and repair." The argument was a striking contrast to his predecessor Donald Trump, who promoted a heroic vision of American history. On the massacre's 99th anniversary, Donald Trump had posed with a Bible outside a historic church after security forces tear gassed protesters outside the White House. Donald Trump headed to Tulsa later that month for a campaign rally that breached coronavirus safety guidelines. After studying an exhibition on this lost boomtown at the Greenwood Cultural Center in Tulsa, Joe Biden's message appeared to be the opposite of Make America Great Again, an acknowledgement that America's history includes slavery and segregation, and that only looking that fully in the face can allow it to move forward. Challenging the language used to describe the one of the worst chapters in America's history of racial violence, the president followed a moment of silence with a pointed statement. "My fellow Americans, this was not a riot. This was a massacre." Joe Biden went on, "Among the worst in America's history, but not the only one, and for too long forgotten by our history. As soon as it happened, there was a clear effort to erase it from our memory, our collective memory. We can't just choose to learn what we want to know and not what we should know." Joe Biden continued, "We should know the good, the bad, everything. That's what great nations do. They come to terms with their dark sides. And we're a great nation." The president also noted that whilst Greenwood's black community recovered, it was marginalized again by housing redlining and urban renewal projects, including highways, a pattern seen in many American cities. Biden promised that his administration would address racism at its root, expanding federal contracting with small disadvantaged businesses, investing billions of dollars in communities like Greenwood, and pursuing new efforts to combat housing discrimination. Notably, Biden also used the platform to condemn efforts in recent months by Republican state legislatures to impose voting restrictions, likely to have a disproportionate impact on people of color, as a truly unprecedented assault on democracy. Biden said he had asked Kamala Harris, his vice president, to lead his administration's effort to protect voting rights. "With her leadership and your support, we're going to overcome again, but it's going to take a hell of a lot of work," he said. So, Vice President Kamala Harris released a statement that noted that almost 400 bills have been introduced at the state level since the last presidential election to make it more difficult for some people to vote. "The work ahead of us is to make voting accessible to all American voters and to make sure every vote is counted through a free, fair, and transparent process," Kamala Harris said. President Biden has made numerous policy speeches as president, but the convergence of history, racial justice, and the audience on Tuesday seemed to strike a particular chord in him. It was the neo-Nazi march in Charlottesville, Virginia, in 2017 that moved Biden to end political retirement and run for president again, happened in Greenwood, Tulsa, Oklahoma, was an act of hate and domestic terrorism, with the through line that exists today still, he said, prompting a cry of assent from the audience. Just close your eyes and remember what you saw in Charlottesville, Virginia, 4 years ago on television. Biden added that Viola Mother Fletcher, 107 years old, said the 6th of January insurrection, when a mob of Donald Trump's supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol, broke her heart, and reminded her of what happened here in Greenwood, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 100 years ago. He noted that hate crimes continue to target Asian Americans and Jewish Americans. Hate's never defeated, it only hides. It hides, and given just a little bit of oxygen by its leaders, it comes out from under the rock, like it's happening again, as if it never went away. So folks, we must not give hate a safe harbor.
Food insecurity among U.S. veterans and military families has been a problem which has persisted for some time. Not only is this an issue which has not been covered in the mainstream media that often, U.S. policymakers have failed to address it. Veterans of the U.S. are Americans that the U.S. government has used for their foreign policy adventures, especially wars that have been waged, and there has been no shortage of wars when it comes to the U.S.
We veterans become quite dangerous when we become activated and realize the truth and understand that we've been used as pawns in a game for bankers' wars. So we suffer emotionally. The rate of suicide amongst the veterans is 22 a day. That is unreported. And food insecurity, well, that's minor, compared to some of the other issues. We've got some major, major breakdown. America is imploding flat out, and part of it is the breakdown of society, family, and our veterans. They say thank you for your service, but in truth, we throw them in the gutter.
It was revealed that the U.S. is either directly or covertly involved in more than 80 military incursions across the world under the so-called War on Terror. The Pentagon was sending U.S. troops on missions around the globe to combat what it called violent extremists. The U.S. also has over 800 military bases in 80 countries. So their military personnel is very active. So when these veterans are reported to not have the means to provide themselves with food, that is not only embarrassing for the U.S., but reveals the mindset of U.S. lawmakers who are failing to take care of these veterans. After all, these are the same people that the Pentagon put in harm's way in battlefields across the world.
The politicians are actually doing their job. Their job is not to serve the people. Their job is to serve the bankers. They roll over and do as a dog, well-trained dog, would do for the bankers. They do, everything they do is counter to the interests of the people of America. Name me one thing that America does that is actually in the interest of the people. The best they can do is send out a COVID relief check, which is really just a mild form of bribery, like throwing a dog a bone. The U.S. government does not work for the people. The government is comprised of traitors who, by the legal definition of the word, treason, should be charged, convicted, and, according to the law, executed.
According to one study, 6.5% were food insecure between 2011 and 2017. However, other studies show food insecurity among veterans were higher, hovering at around 25%. That is half of the total veteran population of around 18 million. Another sad reality amongst U.S. veterans is the high degree of suicides. That number is said to be between 17 to 23 veterans every day. Although the number is on a downward trajectory, it is still very high. The situation was so severe that in 2013, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs released a study that covered suicides from 1999 to 2010, which showed that roughly 22 veterans were dying by suicide per day, or one every 65 minutes. Some sources suggest that this rate may be undercounting suicides.
There would be no interest in them inflating the numbers. If anything, they will deflate the numbers. So yes, I believe it is far more than 22 a day. You know, my partner, who I'm working with now as a Marine, aside from the suicides, he was in Afghanistan fighting a banker's war, as I was in Iraq, and he stepped on an IED, and his legs were blown off above the knees. Right there, legs gone. He had to deal with all of that and come home, and I can assure you, the price he paid was not worth it, and especially when you consider the fact, and he knows this as well as I, we don't fight to defend America.
Why the U.S. government is not paying the close attention and care to veterans has been a subject of debate amongst policymakers. On the one hand, there's a U.S. military budget over $1,700 billion. One would think that some of that should be allocated for veterans. Yet, not only is that not done, veterans are going hungry and are committing suicide daily.
Well, I'll tell you who gets the money, and it ain't the veterans. Israel gets over $10 million a day. That's over $3 billion. That is the richest nation in the Middle East. Meanwhile, the people of Gaza are sucking on the latest slaughter, genocide, torture, crimes against humanity, and war crimes. Again, the American taxpayer is flipping the bill for that. So Israel's doing quite swimmingly, but the veterans in America, oh, sorry, we really don't have much. We're going to spend a bunch of money to send you off to war, but when you come back from war, we will throw you into the trash.
Even the veterans who seek medical attention are not faring that well either. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, which was created to care for military veterans, is reported to be under siege, facing one challenge after another. Extreme wait times for care have been reported, with some not being treated at all as a result. Surely the more than 2 million women and men who served in the U.S. so-called global war on terrorism, which has been waged primarily in Afghanistan, Iraq, and Syria, are now rethinking why they fought for a government that does not care about them, a mindset that will be passed on to others in the U.S.
Israel's war on Gaza ended over a week ago, but voices in condemnation of the regime's crimes against the Palestinian people are still being heard around the world. Pro-Palestinian activists from across the United States descended on the capital, Washington, D.C., to hold a rally. The protesters called on Israel to stop killing Palestinians. They also called for an end to Israel's occupation of Palestinian territories and demanded that the U.S. government stop funding the regime.
For us, we need to demand the following. One, immediate, unconditional lifting of the siege on Gaza. Let me repeat, immediate, unconditional lifting of the siege on Gaza, because that is what international law requires. Second, we need to hold Israel accountable in the International Criminal Court. Netanyahu is a criminal war, committed war crime. We need to take Israel to the International Criminal Court. Third, we need the implementation of the 4 Geneva Conventions. Palestinians should be protected, not demonized.
It's definitely significant. There hasn't been a demonstration. They're not huge demonstrations. It's hundreds of people, but that's better than nothing at all. And it's not just in Washington, it's in New York, in Boston, in Michigan, Dearborn, there are, as you said, in London as well. So the visibility is there where it wasn't before on Palestinian issues. So this is really a change. And also there's now, it's quite acceptable for Congress and Senate to put forward bills to curb the so-called aid, the military gifts of $3 billion every year for Israel to destroy Palestinians.
other speakers rejected attempts by corporate media to use the manufactured anti-Semitism crisis to undermine public support for the Palestinian cause. Israel's foreign minister, Gabi Ashkenazi, arrived in the Egyptian capital, Cairo, on Sunday to discuss the May 21st truce. It marked the first formal visit by an Israeli foreign minister to Egypt in 13 years. Ashkenazi had earlier said he'd discuss what he called a permanent ceasefire with Egypt's officials. The truce was brokered and is being monitored by Egypt.
Just calling for a permanent ceasefire, that makes you want to laugh, because a ceasefire is a break in hostilities. A permanent ceasefire would be peace. So if what they're calling for is peace, well, then now you're going to have to get into how do you come about peace. You have to negotiate. And who are you going to negotiate with? Well, you have to negotiate with Hamas, because the PA has really no authority here. So the very first thing, before anything, you have to have elections. So somehow Israel's got to allow elections to go ahead. But they won't want to do that, because that will elect Hamas. But in any case, they're going to have to deal with Hamas on the ceasefire, because Hamas is the military power, the only resistance, active resistance. The PA is basically just a caretaker for Israel.
Palestinians have hailed their victory in the battle, citing their show of force to the Israeli regime by launching over 4,000 rockets and scores of drones to combat the enemy. Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad Movement, Ziad al-Nakhala, has said the fight with Israel proved that Palestinians can overcome all challenges with a strong will. Nakhala added that for every Palestinian killed by Israel, the resistance will bomb Tel Aviv. The developments over the past month have shown that the next time the regime ventures an offensive against Gaza, it would face grave consequences.
A mass grave containing the remains of 215 indigenous children has been discovered in Canada. The remains were unearthed at the site of a former residential school for indigenous children near the town of Kamloops in British Columbia. The bodies belong to students, including some as young as 3 years old. The authorities said an investigation into the timing and cause of their death is underway. The Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, reacted to the news by calling it distressing and a reminder of a dark chapter in Canada's history. Also, Canada's National Centre for Truth and Reconciliation said in a statement that the discovery of bodies of Indigenous children at a former residential school is a reminder of the violence that had been inflicted on Indigenous societies. The Kamloops Indian Residential School was the largest in Canada's residential school system. It was part of a network of schools run by the Roman Catholic Church from the 1870s until 1996. For more than a century, Canadian authorities forcibly assimilated Indigenous children by separating them from their families and forbidding them from speaking their native languages or performing cultural practices. Residential schools' main objective was assimilating the children into white Canadian society by severing their Indigenous family and cultural ties. These were the values that colonial settlers, who made up the majority of the population at that time, brought to Canada. Children were victims of widespread physical, emotional, and sexual abuses within these institutions. Today, those experiences are blamed for a high incidence of poverty, alcoholism, and domestic violence, as well as high suicide rates in their community.
The land that is stolen from them is simply a result. It's not the cause. It is certainly part and parcel of it. The indigenous population has suffered greatly since the first white Europeans colonists came to Canada. They stole the land, but they oppressed the people. They killed them. They enslaved them. This is a long, long history of settler colonialism that Canada has not yet come completely to terms with, and it needs to.
150,000 Native or First Nations children were forcibly removed from their families and sent to residential schools. Schools were rife with physical abuse, rape, malnutrition, and other atrocities against the children. A 2015 investigation into Canada's residential school network concluded that the Canadian government and churches have pursued a policy of cultural genocide against the country's rightful owners. The documents revealed that many students lost their lives because they were exposed to outbreaks of measles, tuberculosis, influenza, and other contagious diseases. Over 4,100 children died due to diseases or in accidents at schools have been identified to date. They were often buried in unmarked graves without identification or notice to their parents. Moreover, while the residential schools may be closed, Indigenous children continue to be separated from their families in disproportionate numbers. According to census data, in 2016, more than 52% of children in foster care were Indigenous. That's while Indigenous children made up 7.7% of Canada's all foster children in care population. The systematic discrimination against Indigenous people in Canada has existed for decades. Despite making up just 5% of Canada's population, 30% of the country's prisoners are Indigenous. Also, the government has willfully and recklessly discriminated against Indigenous children living on reserves by failing to provide funding for child and family services.
Yes, their rights will be respected, but it will be because of activists, people within the Native community who are working very hard now. There are many, many people who are working for the rights of Indigenous people, people not only members of that community, but members of other communities within Canada. They're working hard to implement government changes, to make the government see that it must respect their rights.
Forced removal, genocide, and assimilation are what colonial settlers inflicted on the Indigenous peoples in Canada. After all, what's for sure is that Canada's foundation as a country is based upon the process of colonization.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip are still reeling from the most recent Israeli onslaught against the coastal territory. Such scenes of destruction are seen throughout Gaza, with many families camping near their flattened homes. It could take many months before these ruined buildings are rebuilt. Israel's devastating onslaught left scores of Palestinians, including dozens of children, dead. The war was another stark reminder of how brutal the regime can be in dealing with the people it has subjugated for many decades. The Israelis argued during the operation that they were trying to wipe out resistance groups and their capabilities. But that's implausible because the sheer number of civilian casualties and horrific scenes of destruction of residential buildings leave no doubt that the regime committed numerous crimes and violations during its latest war. On Thursday, the United Nations Human Rights Council voted to launch an international investigation into the war. The draft resolution was presented by Pakistan on behalf of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation and the Palestinian delegation to the United Nations. Pakistan's ambassador to the OIC, Khalil Hashmi, who was speaking on behalf of the organization, sharply criticized Israel's supporters. He blasted Israel's allies for shielding the occupier from global accountability and providing arms and ammunition for its widely reported war crimes and crimes of apartheid against the Palestinian people. United Nations Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet had tough words for Israel. She rejected Israeli claims that the destroyed buildings in Gaza were hosting members of the Palestinian resistance groups or used for military purposes. Meanwhile, the UN rights chief also criticized Hamas for firing rockets at Israeli cities, saying it constituted, quote, a clear violation of international humanitarian law. Thursday's announcement of an international investigation into alleged crimes committed during the 11-day war seems to have enraged the Israelis. The regime was quick to reject the decision, saying it would not cooperate with the probe. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas, on the other hand, welcomed the investigation. The United States, which has observer status and no vote at the Geneva Forum, refrained from speaking at the special session. The investigators will have a broad mandate to look into all alleged violations. The probe will cover not just the Gaza Strip, but also the occupied West Bank and the Israeli cities, which came under retaliatory rocket attacks by Palestinian resistance groups. Future findings of the independent investigation are expected to once again mount pressure on the Israeli regime. But will its allies allow any meaningful action against it? The U.S. in particular has been extremely supportive of Tel Aviv. Observers believe this unwavering support leaves no room for the U.S. to want to be a mediator between the Israelis and the Palestinians.
Obviously, for people in Palestine, for many, many countries in the world, the notion of the United States being a mediator is simply a derisory. It's a joke, and nobody believes it. But for internal domestic consumption, that's important. It also is a fig leaf for Europeans, particularly the British, but others, to say, well, the United States is in charge, and we don't have to do anything. But I think increasingly, and we see that, increasingly the United States is no longer considered to be a mediator. The Palestinians, for sure, cannot continue to do this. Abbas cannot continue to agree to these things, and that's obvious.
Iranian Radio. Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
A generation of American veterans are living every day with the memories and the sense that they ultimately accomplished nothing, says Kelly Bucker Velahus, journalist, in an article titled, Generation of U.S. Veterans Left with Emptiness After Slow End to Failed War. Stay tuned for more. At the beginning of the Afghanistan war in 2001, every American eye was glued to the television. The nation's military forces were at the center of this drama, and they remained so in the early years as media embeds in the field made sure their story was told the way the Pentagon wanted. Of course, not all of the stories could be spun in the military's favor as the wars in Iraq, then Afghanistan moved into the counterinsurgency years, there was a wave of IED injuries, war crimes, the kidnapping, soldiers coming home with traumatic brain injuries, PTSD, and deadly exposure to toxic burn pits raging on U.S. forward operating bases. A scandal over atrocious conditions at the Walter Reed Military Hospital in 2007, accompanied by pictures of troops with amputations lined up in wheelchairs, reminded Americans that yes, they were indeed in a two-front war, and their men and women were sacrificing their limbs and their minds. Then something happened. After troops' numbers started decreasing in larger numbers, America's attention started shifting away. News organizations started pulling foreign correspondents and television networks stopped covering the war altogether. 7 years later, Washington is, by all accounts, bringing its remaining troops home from Afghanistan. But there are no victory parades because, by any measure, there is no victory to celebrate. Billions of dollars of equipment will be left behind, much of it destroyed, because after two decades, the Americans can't trust that it won't fall into the wrong hands. It's no surprise, then, that some veterans are expressing mixed feelings about the withdrawal and the role in the war. And this is a big group. Those in their 20s at the beginning are middle-aged. Others did their deployments in later years. In 2019, the Pentagon reported that over 775,000 Americans served in Afghanistan at least once. In April, Military Times published a story about these veterans' reaction to the news that the last troops would be leaving by September 11, the 20-year anniversary of the attacks. Peter Lucier, a Marine veteran who lost a comrade to an IED during a patrol in Helmand Province in 2012, had been lobbying actively for withdrawal as part of the group common defense. But when the news came, Lucier had a different reaction. Emptiness at first, he said, and then, to his surprise, anger crept in. And I don't know why, Lucier told the paper about the anger he felt. This is what I wanted. Lucier reporter Stephen Lucy wrote, wondered whether he is angry that the war didn't end sooner or because he thinks the war has been lost for some time, or he said perhaps he's angry over the loss of his friend. There is no easy answer, no victory dance, no we were right and they were wrong. Jason Dempsey, 49, who deployed twice to Afghanistan as an army officer to train Afghan forces, told the New York Times in April. Veteran Elliot Ackerman told the paper that when he heard the news, he thought of the Afghans, particularly those who worked directly with the Americans over the last two decades. He asked, "What about these people who trusted us? Will this be seen as a great betrayal?" Several vets interviewed for the story felt the same guilt over abandonment while knowing the war hadn't been going right for some time. "I didn't even know how to feel. I had to text other vets I know for a gut check because it's so confusing," recalled Barnes, 37, who had served as a journalist in the Marine Corps. "It seemed like a lost cause when I got to Afghanistan.